98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. NFL analyst Mark Schlereth talks football with Bickley and Murata. Brought to you by Earnhardt Ford in Chandler. Proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Visit EarnhardtFord.com.
Hour number two of the show, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. Luke Lipinski in for Vince Murata. The Bickley and Murata Show joins, as we are every week, by the one and only Mark Schlereth. Mark, how you doing today?
How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, Mark. We appreciate it, man. Called you the greatest guest in radio before you came on, and I mean that, man. I'm not just messing around.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, my standards are a little bit low, but you know, hey, you give us a lot to work with. No, I'm just kidding.
As are mine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right. Let's talk about the Buccaneers Cardinals game. The end of it, kind of got Cardinal fans a little bit ticked off here because it wasn't so much the fact that they assigned a pass interference flag and a penalty to a play that there was no flag on that helped Tampa, the not even reviewing the last play of the game. You add them up together, and Cardinal fans kind of felt like they got jobbed there. What did you think of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I tell you what. First off, they haven't made a move on any of these pass interferences all year. There's been a handful of them that have even been reviewed or been turned over or anything like that. So, yeah, that one, that was quirky. You know, I always look at it, though. I always look at these things at the end of games or these things that go on from an officiating standpoint. At what point do you start to realize that, hey, man, it's an imperfect system. What we've asked these officials to do is probably impossible. And so I get to the point where you're just like, I'm not going to let it ever come down to officiating mistakes. Like, I'm never going to use that as an excuse. I'm never going to look at it that way. I never have as a player. I haven't as an analyst. I think there's so many mistakes you made. I mean, what if in the first quarter you throw a touchdown in the red zone to a wide open receiver? What happens at the end of the game with a minute and change left where you throw a pick at the end of the game? Like, those things to me are in your control. You'll never have the officiating of this game in your control. It never will be. And like I said, I don't put it all on the officials. I put a lot of that on the league. And so the inconsistency, I mean, the only thing that's consistent about officiating in this league is the inconsistency of the officiating. So I just always look at it like I'm never going to play that game.
Mark, if you look at David Johnson, he finished that game on Sunday with 6 touches for 10 total yards and in a big fumble. And Cliff Kingsbury basically said afterwards he was benched at that point. I'm sure you've been asked about him a lot, but it seems like he's trending in the wrong direction still. What do you see from David Johnson?
You guys, last year he looks like a shell of his former self. And I talked to you about it this year. I mean, I can walk you through blitz pickup situations. I can walk you through a bunch of different things of his game where, you know, wrong reads or bad reads in the running game. I can walk you through blitz pickup situations. You can put on just about any game. But the games that I have covered where I really, you know, dug deep into the coach's films where he is not an active participant, where he just doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it took this long. Maybe it's just because you haven't had a viable option behind him. But, yeah, there's a lot of things that you look at and just say, hey, man, it's just not, you know, it's not personal. I got to be careful because, you know, sometimes I get emotional and then, you know, my former teammates call me and yell at me. But,
that's why we love you, man.
Yeah, but, for me, I look at David Johnson and say, hey, whatever the case may be, whether it's the injuries, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, you haven't been the same guy. And there have been opportunities to do some of the dirty work that, to me, it looks like you've turned down. And and that, to me, is the most disappointing thing. Like, you know, as a football player, we're all asked to play the game. And there are things that you have to do to support your teammates, to support your football team. And if you're unwilling to do those things, well, that's just nothing more than selfishness or just a lack of desire or whatever the case may be. And those things aren't fun, you know. I mean, it's not fun. But, you know, I'm watching right now, I'm calling the Carolina game. I'm watching one of the best backs in the National Football League right now, Christian McCaffrey. You want to talk about a guy who will stick his nose in there and pick up a blitz, a guy that has worked, I mean, tirelessly on doing that, a guy who has studied other guys. He studied Darren Sproles being a smaller guy and how you create leverage and how you do that and how you – like, he wants to be great. And to be great, you have to be all around, and you have to do the dirty work. And, frankly, the last 2 years I've been calling games, and I've called a bunch of Arizona games – that's a guy that doesn't want to do the dirty work.
You're right on the money about all of that, and it seems like no matter what game I watch, whether it's Dalvin Cook in Minnesota, even Ronald Jones for Tampa, they're running with their hair on fire. They're accepting and inviting all contact and dishing back what they can, and it's passionate, engaging, compelling stuff. I'm curious in a guy like David Johnson. How do these stories play? And you touched a little bit on this, but if you could elaborate on how these stories play out inside a locker room when you get a guy who got paid, who suddenly maybe doesn't want, lost his taste for it all. I know what happened to Jared Valdir in training camp. He got up one day and said, I'm done. He went home. He got reminded that you got $6 million of guaranteed money coming your way, and he came back. He was never the same and never treated the same. What's going on inside that Cardinal locker room if there are guys who are wondering, dude, really, you're shutting it down after you got paid and not even giving us that kind of full effort?
I think that guys understand, like, that you can become somewhat of a pariah if that's the perception. If the perception is he's trying hard, but he's just been beat up and he's been injured and he's just not the same guy, then I think there's a lot more leeway or a lot more quote unquote forgiveness.
Right.
But if the thought process or the feel, and I have no idea, I'm not in that locker room, but if the thought process is really, dude, like, really, like, we're fighting here,
yeah,
especially like as an offensive lineman, like when you have to hit people on every play, and like you think about that position. I mean, come on. The only time we ever, like, A.Q. Shipley, the only time we'll ever talk about A.Q. Shipley is when he's out in the open field looking like a runaway beer truck, right? That's the only time. And we're going to say something about his presence. He's a really good football player. Guy's a really good football player. So there's two things. We'll make fun of, you know, him out there stumbling around trying to block somebody on a screen, right? Because that's what happens to most offensive linemen, unless you're Jason Kelce, who is a freak show.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you get a holding call. And other than that, you don't really get talked about. But every play, you got to hit somebody. Every play, you got to go out and you've got to do your job. And if you don't do your job, right, there's no, like, when you do your job perfectly, nobody notices.
Yeah.
When you as a group don't do your job, everybody notices. Like, there's no other position. Like, you can run a crappy route if you're a wide receiver. And you know what? 9 times out of 10, nobody's going to notice that it was a crappy route. The ball's not coming to you. You're not open. And nobody cares. But take one crappy set and give up an edge rush and get your quarterback killed. Everybody sees it. Right? And
yeah.
So, like, when you think about it in those terms, like, look at what the other dudes are sacrificing for you to have some success. And when you start looking at football in totality, in those terms, like, it is disrespectful to the game and to the guys that you play with if you're not willing to give full effort on a blitz pickup.
Yep.
Like, that to me makes my stomach turn.
Yeah. That's very well said. All right, let me ask you about this, because here's the last thing, the last option with David Johnson. BA used him to a nub in 2016, the really good year. He had 373 touches, had another 300 last year. And there's this theory in the NFL, running backs who get 300 more carries, especially as they get a bit older, either they wear that for a couple of years and then maybe spark again, or they're never the same again physically. Have you seen that? Maybe that applied to Terrell Davis at some point in time. What do you know? What can you say about that phenomenon? One season of extreme use and what it might mean in the course of a running back's career.
Well, I mean, it just like, it is such a word. I always tell a story. I picked up a fumble once. And I created the fumble because I gave up the sack, right? But the ball bounced right into my hand. And so, you know, I'm, and this is when I was a rookie, so I could run. Like, I could move, right?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself at the time, I was like Chariots of Fire. You know, I had the music playing in my head. Popped the ball straight out of the air. That, dun, 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 dun. And I thought, I'm going to score. Like, I literally thought I was going to score.
Uh-huh.
And then Mike Merriweather, I swear to God, he came off the sideline, hit me in the jaw, about broke my jaw. The only reason I didn't fumble, because I did fumble, but like four DBs hit me at the same time and pinned the ball to my chest. And I'll never forget this. I'm laying at the bottom of this pile, snot hanging off my nose, right? I'm slobbering. And I'm thinking to myself, note to self, don't ever pick up the ball again, ever. Like, that thing attracts a lot of attention. So think about every time you carry the ball, you know, there are 11 guys on defense trying to decapitate you. You take shots. You take hits. You take, like, all that stuff. The cumulative effect of that is, I mean, it's really hard on a body. And I will say this, and, you know, to take a little bit of pressure off David Johnson, there comes a time, and everybody's a little bit different, right? Every guy is wired a little bit differently. But there comes a time in everybody's career where your body just says, up yours. I ain't doing it anymore. And I swear to you, mm-hmm. I have played games where I was on crutches on Saturday and played lights out on Sunday. I checked myself out of a hospital on a Monday morning, drove to pregame after having surgery, drove to pregame and started on a Monday night, and we beat the Raiders 27-0. Wow. I mean, I have done these things, and I could always will my body to do these things, and I could always mind over matter. Like, it doesn't matter how bad I hurt, I can go out, I can not only play, but I can play well hurt. And there came a time in my career at the end of it where my body just said, nuh-uh, I ain't doing it anymore. And no matter how much I tried to will it, no matter how much I tried to use mind over matter, my body just said, up yours, I'm not doing this anymore. And at that point, I was like, you know what, it's time. Like, it is time. This is the first time in my career where I felt like, personally, I was a hindrance to my football team.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that I can't live with that. That I cannot. I can't be the reason we're losing games or we can't block people, right? Yeah. So, but there comes a time. And every guy is different. You know, every guy has a little bit, like, to play in the National Football League, you got to be tough and you got to be a little bit crazy. But there are some who are a little bit more crazy and a little bit tougher than you. And so, you know, every guy is a little bit different when it comes to that.
Talking to Mark Schlereth. Mark, you look around the NFL, there are four teams that already have 8 wins. Two of them are in the NFC West. The Rams are not bad, but they're in third. I mean, just looking at what the Cardinals are eventually going to have to navigate here, I know things change from year to year quickly in the NFL, but, I mean, is this going to be one of the two or three toughest divisions for a while in your mind?
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One, I think when you look at what Seattle does, you look at what the 49ers do, there's a couple of things that they adhere to that is really interesting. You know, this league is so cyclical. And look at the teams that are really playing well. The teams that are really playing well right now absolutely control line of scrimmage. They are beasts up front. Look at what the 49ers have on the defensive side, what Seattle has on the defensive side, the way they run the football. Like, this has gone back to late 90s football, right, where you've got a fullback. You know, a couple of weeks ago I'm doing a game, and I come across this stat. The teams that had – the best records in the league, all those teams with the best records in the league had the majority of snaps that they ran out of what we used to call base personnel or 21 personnel, two-back personnel. And at the time it was – the Patriots at 7-0 or 8-0, the Niners at 7-0. It was the Minnesota Vikings at 5-2. It was the Green Bay Packers. I mean, it was like, wow. Look how this trend has gone. It was the Raiders, like what the Raiders have done. But it was the top, like out of the top 10, like seven of them had more two-back formations than anybody else in football. And so it's kind of come back to, as much spread as we like to pretend that, hey, it's all about spreading people out, it's all about throwing the football, it really is about condensing formations. It's really about how you operate from the standpoint of how many different times can we run the same play but out of a different formation, out of a different look, so that we can get really good at running that particular play? Or how many times can we run the exact same play? Or how many times can we run a play that looks the same but has a different concept out of it? So I think you have to be able to do both. And I think the teams that really understand how to run the ball and can dictate in the red zone run on the football are teams that eventually just win a lot of football games, especially as the weather turns and it gets nasty. And in your particular division, you've got two of those teams. Actually, you've got three. It's just that the Rams have kind of forgotten their way, right? They were a spread 11 personnel football team that crammed it down your throat in the run game. So they've gotten away from who they really are, and that's been kind of one of their biggest downfalls.
That's a great point because, if you look at the Rams, because it's easy to say the Rams and the Chiefs are the two teams, and they locked up in that great game last year that was supposed to be the future of football and everything they like to do and spread the field and throw the ball. Rams can't run it anymore, and they just look very, very average. On the flip side, what do you make of what Baltimore is doing right now? Are they just rolling hot right now, or is this team that legit with this approach that they have with their quarterback and running the ball?
Well, they are that legit. And so I've had a chance to do several Baltimore games, one this year, a couple last year. And it's phenomenal. Like, talking to John Harbaugh wouldn't last on the open market. Remember, people were talking about firing John Harbaugh last year?
Yeah.
He wouldn't last for 2 seconds on the open market. One, like, he gave permission to the organization to draft Lamar Jackson when a lot of teams were like, he needs to play wide receiver, he needs to do this. And then he looked at his staff, he changed his offensive coordinator, went to Greg Roman, and he said, let's create something that is unique to only us. And we'd be willing to do this. And you know what? We'll put the quarterback in harm's way, but he is so athletically gifted that we'll look at it like, is he going to really take more shots than a drop-back quarterback takes? Like, is he really going to take more shots? And so they went through this whole plan, this whole scenario. And interestingly enough, as I talked to John about it, he's like, listen, there hasn't been a new passing concept in the National Football League in 15 years. You know, everybody runs a Z drive with a basic over the top of it, right? Everybody runs a flat slant combination. Everybody runs a flat curl combination. You get 3-by-1, you know what you're getting out of 3-by-1. You get somebody running off coverage, somebody running a flat, and somebody running a corner route. It's not that complicated, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, so what we decided to do is to take the running game that's completely unique to us and basically say, we'll create concepts that nobody knows how to defend in a league in which you're not allowed to play in pads anymore in practice. How do you get prepared when you're facing one-on-one and it's completely unique and it's super physical and you don't ever get a chance to practice how to defend it?
Wow.
It is so unique, and they do such a good job. If you split the field in half, you start with, a 5-on-5 combination on one side of the football field, and by the time you snap the ball, you got 7-on-5, and the quarterback is running the ball. I mean, it's I call it heavy spread, is what I call that offense. And I'm telling you what, it's like I'm watching film. I'm like, man, that's it. Oh, that was a great run. Then I'm, oh my god, that was an unbelievable. That's the best run I've ever seen. And I'm like, wait, that one's better than the last one that I just watched.
Right,
It's absolutely ridiculous. It really is.
All right, here's the last thing for you before we let you go. We appreciate your time, as always. You were an excellent, excellent offensive lineman. I'm watching Jadeveon Clowney in the game he had against San Francisco, and I'm wondering, have you ever had a game as good as you were where you just ran up against a guy that just, I can't block this man? Do you ever have a game like that?
Oh,
what does
yeah.
that feel like?
It does not feel good. And yes, I have. I've had that game. I think everybody goes through it. Where you have a dude that just absolutely gives you fits. And it is one of the worst feelings in the world. The one thing you can do as an offensive lineman is you can try to turn it into a street fight, and you're not going to grade out well, but you probably won't cost your team the game. But yeah, I've had those games, where I was just absolute garbage and couldn't block the guy. And, you know what? You just try to survive them. and then you hope the film gets destroyed, right? You
yeah,
try
right,
to survive
right.
it, and then you hope that nobody ever sees that film ever. So it's a hard thing. It's a frustrating thing. And as an offensive lineman, man, it's just depressing. Just absolutely depressing because you just feel like, you've let your guys down. Yeah. So it's a really hard thing to have to go through. But I will say this, both those offensive tackles, both Staley and McGlinchey were out for 4 or 5 weeks or 6 weeks. So it's really hard to come back and get right in. I mean, practice is practice. Games are different. And it's really hard to get right back in and find the rhythm of a football game. And so it's a hard thing to do, not making excuses for those guys. It's a hard game, man. It really is. And they weren't put in great positions to succeed, that's for sure.
Mark Schlereth, great stuff. Always enjoy talking to you. Thanks for the time, man.
Thank you, brother.
All right, guys. Be good.
It's Mark Schlereth joining us there. WWE 2K20 is available now for Xbox One and PS4, and we're giving you the chance to win a copy. Just head to the rewards page at ArizonaSports.com for your chance to win. WWE 2K20 is rated T for teen.
There you go. It's a Wednesday, which means coming up, another edition of Yay or Nay. Luke Lipinski filling in for Vinny. I'm Dan Bickley. You're listening to Arizona Sports 98.7 FM.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
All right, today's poll question, which of course you can find on the front page of ArizonaSports.com. Which Arizona sports team is having the better season? There's only two options. Coyotes, Suns.
Oh.
We don't get the Cardinals in here.
Oh, man.
We don't get ASU anymore after the last few weeks either.
I think that's a real tricky question. I think that's a hard one to ask. I think in terms of who's closer to the playoffs, I think you'd say the Coyotes. And what they just did the last couple of games is kind of proof. But in terms of size of fan base and what they mean to the town, gets a little more debatable at that point.
See, I think you can go, and the Coyotes are 53%, the Suns are 47%.
Yeah.
I mean, the Coyotes are having the better season
yes.
because they should be a playoff team, and they might be a tough team to play in the playoffs. But if you're going by exceeding expectations, the Coyotes were supposed to be this year.
That's a good point.
Whereas the Suns,
yeah.
like my thought coming into the season was the Coyotes are either a year or maybe two ahead of the Suns. Now I think they're about a year and a half ahead of the Suns. So I would expect the Suns to be challenging for a playoff spot next year.
Yeah. So. Maybe even this year.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah, who knows?
We'll see.
So that's your poll question there on the front
page
of ArizonaSports.com. 53 for the Coyotes, 47 for the Suns.
All right, as I said before, it's Wednesday. You know what that means.
Bickley and Murata. See or no? We or nah? Yay or nay?
I do actually know what that means because I'm only ever in here on the show on Wednesdays. So I know that means yay or nay. I think I've played this than anybody.
You've lost plenty of Mock My Worlds.
But I've won, too. I still have the highest score ever.
I forgot.
Do you really?
That.
Yeah. Yeah. It was most hated teams in the Valley.
You also still have one of the worst draft picks ever when you picked double-decker buses as the greatest thing about England.
The background to that was I came in and I said, hey, we're finally playing Mock My World. I'm sure you're going to do some weird thing that isn't sports. And the topic was most notable things about Britain or something.
Right.
It was most British things.
Right.
Double-decker buses
That's
are
about
British.
As British as it gets.
Yeah.
Well, luckily, Eric might have topped you yesterday when you did athletes that you want to see play today, former athletes that you want to see in today's game, and he picked Secretariat. So there is that. So
Secretariat could not outrun a double-decker bus, I can tell you that.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. All right, so semi-breaking news for the Cardinals. They put rookie defensive lineman Zach Allen on injured reserve, meaning his season is over.
Uh-huh.
If you factor that in with Patrick Peterson and all the games that he missed, Darius Filon getting released beginning of the season, Kamdichi showing up out of shape, all that stuff, yay or nay? The main reason that the Cardinals' defense has struggled is because of the lack of availability of those star players rather than coaching or scheme.
Nay. The main reason is they do not have enough playmakers, youth, athleticism, leg speed on defense.
Nay, yeah, it's hard to argue with what you just said. Yeah, the lack of players, but some of those players aren't on the team. Like, yeah. If they could just go pick Khalil Mack and a few other guys, right. They would be better.
Yeah.
So even if everybody, if Peterson played the whole year, if Zach Allen played the whole year, if Filon was still on the team, wouldn't matter.
Filon might have made a difference, I think, at times, but no. I think the linebacker crew is woefully under-athletic, and the whole team lacks... Whole team lacks playmakers on the defensive side of the ball.
Always going to feel like they would have beat Detroit in week one if Patrick Peterson hadn't gotten suspended. But that doesn't like make you
argue
a playoff
with that.
Team or anything.
All right, we'll go to the big topic of David Johnson here, and I put this on Twitter about which combination of running backs should the team start the season with next year. And I'm going to give you the should and will. Yay or nay. The combination of running backs that the team should have next year is Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds. And yay or nay, David Johnson will not be on the team next year.
What? That was so many yays or nays.
Yeah.
All right, just which combination do you want to see be the primary running backs next year?
But that's what I A, we got to see how this season bears out, but if you're asking me right here and now, which I suppose is the point of the whole exercise, yeah, I'd go Chase Edmonds and Kenyon Drake.
But they'd have they'd have to put extra.
That's not
right.
feasible.
Right.
So it's really kind of a moot question.
Well, would you be willing to pay Kenyon Drake knowing that you still are paying David Johnson? That's sort of
well,
the question.
I don't know how that's the point.
It's
I don't
impossible.
Know how you can pull this off. Because Kenyon Drake is going to want to get paid. Now, if he accepts a lower offer, then maybe if he accepts a moderate offer, then maybe you could do it. But you got a lot of holes on defense. You got a lot of things you got to buy. That shopping list is pretty long.
Okay, I'm going to try and answer these the way they were asked.
All right,
nay, it shouldn't be Drake and Chase Edmonds. I think that you're paying David Johnson so much, and I think there's still something you can get out of him. I'm going to assume some of this is injury this year. And then the second one, nay, David Johnson won't not be on the team next year.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well played. All right, the college football rankings came out, and everybody loves the SEC again. Three of the top five were in the SEC. Yay or nay, they should make a rule that in the college football playoff, as long as they stick to four teams only making it, yay or nay, two teams from the same conference should not be allowed to make it.
Oh, I think you were saying two teams should be the max. You're saying
no.
It shouldn't even be two.
Right.
Yay, I'd be on board with that.
Yeah. Essentially, like, you have to win your conference to
get
in.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I do like the idea of that being a hard and fast rule. Because, as I said before, there's just no uniformity in college football. You're constantly comparing apples to oranges and the like. So how do you get that uniformity? Make that a hard and fast rule.
Well,
you've got to be a conference champion to be in the playoff.
That's the thing. I mean, the whole point of this, first of all, you got five power conferences. You only have four teams that you can put in.
Right.
Isn't the whole point to sort of determine which teams are best with that lack of uniformity? Of I want to see what the best team from the Pac-12 does against the best team from the SEC.
Exactly.
Not just I'm going to imagine the SEC is always the best and will never let anything play out to change it.
Yeah, or abolish the conference championship games altogether. There's really no point in them other than to make a lot of money.
And here's the other thing. It's impossible for two teams in the same conference to both go undefeated.
Yes.
So if you don't make it as the second team, that means you had at least one loss, and that was something you controlled and something that you could have prevented.
I wanted a playoff for the longest time because I want to see the teams prove it, and I want to actually find out who the best team is. I don't want it to just be a showcase for the SEC to show off that they think they're better every
year. That's exactly right. That's why you've got to have eight teams eventually. You don't need to go any more than that, because if you get eight teams, you're going to have all Power 5 conferences represented, and you're not going to miss. You're not going to have a playoff team excluded that could have won a championship at eight. At four, you might.
All right. Yesterday was National Every Pizza Topping Except Anchovies Day. Yay or nay, you like anchovies on pizza?
Nay.
Nay.
Yay or nay, there is an unusual topping that you do like on pizza.
No, I'm pretty simple and very Chicago when it comes to my pizza. Give me Italian sausage and fresh garlic, and I am beyond ecstatic.
God, I mean, give me a definition of, like, strange. I mean, buffalo chicken pizza is good. It's not my choice. If I'm eating pizza somewhere new, I have this hard rule that it always has to be pepperoni the first time I try it. Because I think that's the most pure way to tell if the pizza is good. And then if the pizza's good, I'll go back and get some.
Yeah, pineapple.
Listen, I like pepperoni. Nay. Pepperoni gives off a different kind of grease that I don't like how it vibes with the cheese, the mozzarella cheese grease. I do like pepperoni, but there's some kinds of pepperoni that kind of throw off the pizza to me.
So you go Italian sausage every time.
And fresh garlic. Okay. And
crumbled sausage or sliced sausage?
Generally not the crumbled kind. You know, if you're doing a deep dish pizza, then you get the big, disc of Italian sausage.
Right, that's what you like.
That's phenomenal.
All right, finally.
Then there's not a bite, Jarrett, that doesn't include all Italian sausage.
All right, finally, Disney Plus launched yesterday with all the Marvel movies and all the Star Wars movies. Yay or nay? When you look at these space entities, yay or nay, the Guardians of the Galaxy would defeat the Star Wars characters in a battle of, Luke, Leia, Han Solo, Chewbacca.
Yay. I'm a big Rocket Raccoon fan. Groot's pretty cool. Star-Lord's pretty cool. Yeah, I like that franchise.
Luke has the Force,
way
though.
Better than Star Wars.
See, that's the thing. I would say yay, because I feel like the Star Wars cast is carrying some, they could trim some fat. They have some guys that would hold them down.
C-3PO.
Yeah, I mean, they may as well toss him right in the middle of the battle first. But Luke does have the Force, which I feel like is sort of cheating. That's like
right.
The Astros stealing signals with a camera or something.
Yeah. Oh, what a tease to the next segment.
Oh, look at that.
Yes, I would have to go. I'd go nay. I think Star Wars would win, because they could sort of cheat.
And that Wookiee is pretty good. That Wookiee's pretty powerful.
Yeah, he'd do some damage.
He would do some damage.
I don't know. You got Drax. You got Groot.
Now you're just naming characters.
Yeah.
Well, we're powerful.
Now you're just showing off. All right, that's yay or nay. We do it every Wednesday. For the life of me, I do not know why.
The enthusiasm in your voice is palpable.
I'm just messing around.
That's yay or nay.
All right, coming up on the other side, there was a good tease in there somewhere. When is cheating too much? When it's the Houston Astros, we'll discuss. Luke Lapinski, Dan Bickley, you're listening to 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Champagne?
I'm not an alcoholic.
I'm not a big champagne guy.
We don't care if you drink.
Gives me heartburn.
Bickley and Marotta.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta Show, Luke Lapinski in for Vince Marotta. Vic, you said something in pregame, pre-show prep.
Same thing.
In the pregame, about the Astros and just how they've become very unlikable.
Yeah.
And, you said it, and I was like, yeah, that's true. And then I kind of started to think about it, and they really have just become loathsome, haven't they?
They have been, or they have in a lot of different ways. And the latest is a story that The Athletic has uncorked, where a couple of players went on record to describe what the Houston Astros do, and it's kind of brought back this story of cheating. When's it okay? When's it not okay? The story details a very, high-tech manner and way that the Houston Astros would steal signs from the catcher and relay them to hitters, and they do it so fast that that there's got to be electronics involved.
Yeah.
There's got to be cameras involved. And at that point in time, this is where most people in Major League Baseball, they throw up their hands and say, this is too much. Way, way too much. So basically what they did is they'd have somebody crack the code, and then if an off-speed pitch was coming, like a changeup, somebody in the dugout would bang a can, like a trash can. Boom! And so the player at home plate would hear that and automatic, changeup. And the speed at which they did it is crazy. And there are people who have gone out and actually retrieved video of the Astros doing this. And it's kind of taken over baseball, because the Astros now have been involved in a lot of stuff the last couple of years. From having to fire an assistant general manager for very weird, gross remarks made in the clubhouse after a game, to these recurring suspicions and skepticisms of what they're doing. If you recall, during the playoff series against the New York Yankees, the Yankees filed a complaint with Major League Baseball, claimed the Astros were whistling in the dugout to relay signs.
Yeah.
Okay. A.J. Hinch responded with he dismissed it like, if I knew it was that easy to get between the Yankees' ears, I would have done this a long time. This is ridiculous.
Mm.
Well, clearly it's not ridiculous. And A.J. Hinch looks like a real Delta Bravo right now for the way he treated those concerns then with this. It's one thing to, like I said, to have a pair of eyes who can crack a pitcher tipping pitches, or maybe you can pick up a tell from a catcher. But when you start using electronics, now you're getting into a real dangerous realm. And this is not good for the Houston Astros at all. Major League Baseball is going to have to investigate this because they are a player on the record. There's film, there's footage of this, and I'm not sure where this is going, but I've said it before, the Astros are they're the new Yankees. They're the new evil empire. They're the new team that it's just like, oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with the Yankees, I mean, I've never been a Yankees fan, but it was always kind of like, yeah, I don't like them because they're typically pretty good, and they're good because they have more money, and in baseball, that for the longest time was all that mattered. But, I mean, the Astros are just like, you just don't like these guys. Like, you don't want them to succeed. If they all moved over to Atlanta and played for the Braves and managed the Braves, I wouldn't. I mean, that's...
No, you're right.
Let me ask you, do you think this is the type of cheating that fans would get upset about and care about? Because it's sort of a sliding scale. Because like the steroid era, some people cared, some people didn't care at all. You know, the Deflategate or the Patriots filming, you know, practices, some people cared, some people didn't care at all.
Yeah.
Is this the type of cheating?
Yes. People should care about. And I'll tell you why. How else are you going to steal signs from a catcher? You get a guy on second base. Yeah. That's the way to do it. And you got to have the right guy on second base.
So there's some skill involved.
Mm-hmm. So there's some skill involved. And then if you get a guy on second base who can crack that code and then get it relayed to the batter in time, well, then you kind of tip your cap to the other team for being that observant. And then you blame yourself for not changing your sign sequence in the whole nine. But if there's a camera on your catcher 24/7, every second of a game, processing, putting together patterns, and then you just plug in that stuff into algorithms, that's cheating. That's high level cheating kind of stuff that everybody should have a problem with, because that's what you're doing. You're recording every sign the catcher puts down. You're assigning a value to that sign, changeup, curveball, fastball, and you develop patterns, and then you crack the code, and then you do it in real time where it's spitting you out the answer fast enough, where somebody with a bat and a garbage can in a dugout is getting ready to bang that gong.
That would have been my job, by the way, if I was on the team. Just be the guy with the garbage
been that
can.
Guy?
Yeah, I wouldn't have got the hit. Now, I just, for me, it's a gateway into a league where if the Astros are doing it and they win the World Series, other teams are then forced to do it. Other teams that weren't going to cheat.
Yeah.
And so at a certain point, what, is every team doing it 5 years from now? And then the game of baseball is just based on who has the fastest technology?
Yeah.
Then why are we even playing?
Now, for context, I want to play this sound from Mike Leach. And this is Mike Leach, Washington State coach, back when Todd Graham was the head coach at ASU. Now, you remember there was a lot of people who thought Todd Graham was stealing signs from the opponent, to the point where teams came to Tempe and put up curtains, right, to make a show that, hey, we know what you're doing here. Really embarrassing scene. But this is when you take it too far, when you institutionalize cheating, when you tie in electronics to it, it goes somewhere different. This is what Mike Leach had to say about Todd Graham.
Well, I think they still steal signs. You know, we'll have to keep an eye on that because that's certainly the reputation, and I think they have a certain amount of kind of technology and expertise on the subject, which, you know, if they ever go to a different conference or something, I'd certainly like them to share it with us.
The thing is, though, with Mike Leach, I mean, he thinks pirates are chasing him at all times. So, I mean, the paranoia that he typically has, coupled with the fact that ASU wasn't winning games when they were apparently stealing signs,
that's the other thing. That's the shame of it all, is that Todd Graham went, if he went to that great lengths where they had a command center, which is part of what the accusations were, it didn't pay off in the victory total, which really speaks poorly of him. I mean, if you're going to cheat, at least win something.
Yeah, at least the Astros did win
won the World Series. At least it paid off, at least temporarily. But and we play that because it's the line between that old adage that I hate, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, and the level of cheating where you involve electronics and command centers that is just too much. And like you said, it becomes a slippery slope. And then once it becomes that, does every team have to do it?
That's the issue.
And
every team might be doing it.
Well,
right now.
I don't think they are.
Why would they all just pick on the Astros?
Yeah, why would they all pick on the Astros? And then even more to
like you said, he wasn't even anonymous, the player that gave him, that told on him.
It was Mike Fiers, wasn't it?
Yeah. And there was another guy who corroborated it. So to me, it's that, and then it's just the ill will and the lack of trust it creates. I don't think that's good for a conference. I don't think it's good for a sport. When you've got a team that the other team is just kind of, all right, what are they doing now? I don't like that. I don't think that's good for the perception of a league, because I don't lean on sports to teach me life lessons or to teach my kids morals and ethics.
Yeah.
But at some level, you do want the essence of fair play to be there in some recognizable form.
Yeah, and I just don't want to get to a point, especially with baseball, which is already, I think in a lot of ways, with younger generations as they start to grow up and to be sports fans as well.
Yeah.
I think baseball, in a way, is behind certainly basketball and football. And I know hockey isn't as popular as baseball in this country, but it moves faster.
Yeah.
I mean, a hockey game is done in 2 hours and 20 minutes. Baseball game can take you 5 hours.
Right.
And there's 162 baseball games. If we get to the point where it's just whose technology relays the signal first, coupled with the fact that now everybody's just swinging for the fences with launch angle every time anyway, you're just going to get 30 teams that look very similar.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is that exciting to anybody?
No, that's really not exciting to anybody, is it? No, it's really not.
No.
All right, so that's what's happening in Major League Baseball. What a joke. The Houston Astros. Cliff Kingsbury's favorite baseball team, by the way.
Is it really?
Yeah. Kind of. All right, real quick, from Cardinal practice today, Patrick Peterson on the practice field. That's good. Justin Murray on the practice field. Tremaine Brock on the practice field. So, especially Patrick Peterson, that's a good sign. I wasn't kind of expecting that. We'll get back into that a little bit. But you know what time it is? The Bickley Blast coming up next. Luke Lipinski, Dan Bickley. You're listening to Arizona Sports 98.7 FM.